This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to the Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and our first article comes from Front Page News of Military Times, dated March 19, 2025. Air Force monitoring basis for compliance with DEI executive orders. The U.S. Air Force is sending teams to a number of bases to ensure compliance with President Donald Trump's executive orders related to diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, according to a Monday press release. The service will send teams consisting of approximately 5 reviewers to 9 installations to evaluate how such orders are being implemented, an Air Force spokesperson told Military Times on Wednesday. The Air Force's effort stems from the Pentagon's January 29th memo, Restoring America's Fighting Force, which calls for the creation of a task force to oversee efforts to extinguish diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, programs in the military and implement merit-based colorblind policies, among other initiatives. That directive followed an executive order from Trump calling for the end of all military DEI programs, stating such programs were eroding lethality and force readiness by engaging in a race and sex discrimination. The task force requires military departments to validate the execution of all presidentially directed executive orders related to diversity, equity, and inclusion, critical race theory, and gender ideology, with an emphasis on 5 elements, the Air Force release said. Those elements include the teams verifying that the Air Force is limiting sex-based, race-based, or ethnic-based quotas for jobs or missions, not teaching any subjects related to critical race theory, gender ideology, or diversity, equity, and inclusion, offering a curriculum that teaches America is the most powerful force for good in human history, prohibiting boards and councils from instructions related to DEI subjects, and is not considering sex, race, or ethnicity during promotion or selection processes. The validation teams, made up of leaders with expertise in curriculum, promotion boards, and the 5 assessment elements, according to the release, will tentatively visit the following bases from March 17th to March 28th, according to an Air Force spokesperson. Peterson Space Force Base, Colorado. U.S. Air Force Academy, Colorado. Buckley Space Force Base, Colorado. Randolph Air Force Base, Texas. Joint Base San Antonio, Texas. Heisler Air Force Base, Mississippi. Herbert Field Air Force Base, Florida. Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama. And Robbins Air Force Base, Georgia. While there, the teams will review documents, analyze data, conduct interviews, lead focus groups, and audit classrooms, according to the release. After the teams complete their work, the department will continue to monitor compliance through in-progress reviews, the release said. Meanwhile, the Trump administration continues its purge of DEI-related content from military websites, including the Air Force. Air Force webpages on historic female pilots have been taken offline, including at least a dozen related to World War II-era women's Air Force service pilots and retired Major General Jeanine Leavitt, the Air Force's first female fighter pilot, Air Force Times previously reported. In our next article, judge blocks Trump's order banning trans troops from military service, dated March 19, 2025. A federal judge blocked enforcement of President Donald Trump's executive order banning transgender people for military service on Tuesday, the latest in a string of lethal setbacks for his sweeping agenda. The U.S. District Judge Anna Reyes in Washington, D.C. ruled that Trump's order to exclude transgender troops from military service likely violates their constitutional rights. She was the second judge of the day to rule against the administration, and both rulings came within hours of an extraordinary conflict as Trump called for impeaching a third judge who temporarily blocked deportation flights, drawing a rare rebuke from the Chief Justice John Roberts. Reyes, who was nominated by President Joe Biden, delayed her order until Friday morning to give the administration time to appeal. The court knows that this opinion will lead to heated public debate and appeals. In a healthy democracy, both are positive outcomes, Reyes wrote. We should all agree, however, that every person who has answered a call to serve deserves our gratitude and respect. Army Reserve Second Lieutenant Nicholas Talbot, one of 14 transgender active duty service members named as plaintiffs in the lawsuit, said he was holding his breath as he waited to find out if he would be separated from the military next week. This is such a sigh of relief, he said. This is all I've ever wanted to do. This is my dream job, and I finally have it. And I was so terrified that I was about to lose it. The White House didn't immediately respond to a message seeking comment. Trump's Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, posted about the ruling on social media, writing, District Court judges have now decided they are in command of the armed forces. Is there no end to this madness? The judge issued a preliminary injunction requested by attorneys who also represent others seeking to join the military. On January 27th, Trump signed an executive order that claims the sexual identity of transgender service members conflicts with a soldier's commitment to an honorable, truthful, and disciplined lifestyle, even in one's personal life, and is harmful to military readiness. In response to the order, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth issued a policy that presumptively disqualifies people with gender dysphoria from military service. Gender dysphoria is a distress that a person feels because their assigned gender and gender identity don't match. The medical condition has been linked to depression and suicidal thoughts. Plaintiff's attorneys contend Trump's order violates transgender people's rights to equal protection under the Fifth Amendment. Government lawyers argue that military officials have broad discretion to decide how to assign and deploy service members without judicial interference. Reyes said she did not take lightly her decision to issue an injunction blocking Trump's order, noting judicial overreach is no less pernicious than executive overreach. But, she said, it was also the responsibility of each branch of government to provide checks and balances for the others, and the court therefore must act to uphold the equal protection rights that the military defends every day. Thousands of transgender people serve in the military, but they represent less than 1% of the total number of active duty service members. In 2016, a Defense Department policy permitted transgender people to serve openly in the military. During Trump's first term in the White House, the Republicans issued a directive to ban transgender service members. The Supreme Court allowed the ban to take effect. President Joe Biden, a Democrat, scrapped it when he took office. Hegseth's February 26 policy says service members are applicants for military service who have a current diagnosis or history of or exhibit symptoms consistent with gender dysphoria are incompatible with the high mental and physical standards necessary for military service. The plaintiffs who sued to block Trump's order include an Army Reserve platoon leader from Pennsylvania, an Army major who was awarded a Bronze Star for service in Afghanistan, and a Sailor of the Year award winner serving in the Navy. The cruel irony is that thousands of transgender service members have sacrificed some risking their lives to ensure for others the very equal protection rights the military bans seeks to deny them, Reyes wrote. Their attorneys from the National Center for Lesbian Rights and GLAAD Law said transgender troops seek nothing more than an opportunity to continue dedicating their lives to defending the nation. Yet, these accomplished service members are now subject to an order that says they must be separated from the military based on a characteristic that has no bearing on their proven ability to do the jobs, plaintiff's attorneys wrote. This is a stark and reckless reversal of policy that denigrates honorable transgender service members, disrupts unit cohesion, and weakens our military. Government attorneys said the Department of Defense has a history of disqualifying people from military service if they have physical or emotional impairments, including mental health conditions. In any context other than the one at issue in this case, DoD professional military judgment about the risk of allowing individuals with physical or emotional impairments to serve in military would be virtually unquestionable, they wrote. Plaintiff's attorneys said Trump's order fits his administration's pattern of discriminating against transgender people. Federal judges in Seattle and Baltimore separately paused Trump's executive order halting federal support for gender-affirming care for transgender youth under 19. Last month, a judge blocked prison officials from transferring three incarcerated transgender women to men's facilities and terminating their access to hormone therapy under another Trump order. Trump also signed orders that set up new rules about how schools can teach about gender and that intend to ban transgender athletes from participating in girls and women's sports. From its first days, this administration has moved to strip protections from the transgender people across multiple domains, including housing, social services, schools, sports, healthcare, employment, international travel, and family life, plaintiff's lawyers wrote. Talbot 31 of Akron, Ohio, enlisted in March 2024 as an openly trans person after fighting for roughly 9 years to join the service. He said his fellow servers gave him good-natured flack for being so much older than other recruits, but never treated him differently for being trans. Talbot anticipates that his colleagues will be pretty excited that I get to stay. Now I can go back on to focusing on what's really important, which is the mission, said Talbot, a platoon leader for a military policing unit. And in our next article, Air Force purges pilots, photos, websites on pioneering female pilots. Some Air Force websites are pioneering female pilots from World War II to the modern era have been taken offline as the Trump administration continues its strive to eliminate diversity-related materials from government sites. Air Force Times identified at least a dozen pages on the World War II-era Women's Air Force Service Palace, or WASP, and retired Major General Jeanine Livett, the Air Force's first female fighter pilot, including biographies, photos, museum exhibits, a video, and a commentary, were no longer online as of Tuesday. The URLs for three of those pages were modified with the acronym DEI, short for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, a term the Trump administration has used as a pejorative. The removals come as the Trump administration and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth have assailed diversity-related initiatives of previous administrations, calling them divisive and a distraction from efforts to make the military more lethal. President Donald Trump signed an executive order on his first day in office, ending those initiatives, and later directed the military and other government agencies to swiftly pull such materials from public view. In an email statement, the Air Force spokesperson did not specifically address the removed pages, but said that some removed historical content could be put back online after review. Our intent is to restore purely historical content after we review to make sure it complies with the guidelines, the spokesperson said. A message sent to Levitt's website requesting comment was not answered by Tuesday afternoon. Trailblazer content removed. The WASP were a group of more than 1,000 women who conducted a pilot training and ferried aircraft domestically during World War II. The program was formed to ease the stateside pilot shortage suffered by the Army Air Corps, as the majority of the nation's male pilots were overseas. In 1993, Levitt became the first woman to serve as a fighter pilot in the U.S. military when she graduated from flight training and began flying as the F-15E Strike Eagle. During her 31 years in uniform, Levitt flew more than 3,000 hours, including 300 hours in combat above Iraq and Afghanistan, advanced to two-star general, and held several leadership positions, including Air Force's Chief of Safety Commander of the Air Force Recruiting Service, and two stints as a wing commander. She was also the first woman ever to command an Air Force fighter wing. The removals appear to be conducted consistently, with some material being held at one location, but remaining online at another. The Internet Archive, a nonprofit digital library that preserves archived copies of websites, retained copies of most of these pages. It showed one now pulled site as was online as recently as February 6. In the Trump administration's first week, the push to remove diversity-related materials prompted the Air Force to briefly pull a course from basic military training that includes videos on the WASP as well as the Tuskegee Airmen, the first black pilots in the U.S. military who escorted bombers on raids over Nazi Germany. That course was reinstated days later after a public outcry. Meanwhile, other historic subjects involving minority service members that have recently been removed from the military's webpages include materials on the Navajo Code Talkers of World War II and PFC Ira Hayes, a Marine and member of the Pima tribe who helped raise the U.S. flag during the Battle of Iwo Jima. Tuskegee Airmen material appears to be unaffected by the recent changes. The deleted Air Force materials related to the WASP include a page on the National Museum of the United States Air Force's website. The page included a gallery of photos of a museum exhibit on the pilots, including images of a Congressional Gold Medal that the then President Barack Obama presented to the WASP in 2009. That page was online last month. The Air Force also pulled a 2022 release from Dyess Air Force Base in Texas about a Dyess Women's Summit celebration saluting the service's all-women crews and marked the 80th anniversary of the WASP. Local elementary school students and ROTC cadets also attended that event, according to an archived version of the release. That release included a quote from the third grader daughter of a deputy commander who called the event very fun and said, "I liked looking at the planes and I learned that the WASP were women in the military just like my mom." A female airman who attended the summit wrote a commentary about the event a few weeks later, describing how hearing about WASP, overcoming discrimination, and seeing women's progress in the military gave her hope in the future of the Air Force. The commentary is also now offline tagged with DEI. Multiple pages related to Leavitt and her status as a service's first woman to fly fighter jets have been taken down. A YouTube video labeled Brigadier General Jeanine Leavitt, Diversity is a Competitive Advantage, which was posted as part of a 2019 Erin Magazine feature, has been made private. The two photos of Leavitt from her tenure commanding the 4th Fighter Wing, the captions of which refer to her as the first female fighter pilot, have also been pulled. An archived version of the pages show one is of her in her F-15E cockpit. The other photo shows Leavitt in her flight suit, taking notes at a briefing. Multiple versions of an Air Force article about Leavitt's 2023 retirement, which called her a trailblazer, are unavailable, though a remaining version could be found in a little-known corner of the service's website. From her early aspirations in aerospace engineering to confronting policies that once barred women from combat-coded fighter aircraft roles, Leavitt resolved knew no bounds, the Air Force said in that article. A 2013 Air Force News Service release about Leavitt, titled Air Force's First Female Fighter Pilot, continues to break stereotypes, also now shows a 404 error message. Its URL has been tagged DEI. Another Air Force release, which was pulled from one base's website but remains available elsewhere, described Leavitt's 2022 visit to Step Shepherd Air Force Base in Texas, where she met with other female aviators and gave them advice on matters such as perseverance, how to find mentors in a male-dominated fighter pilot culture, and how to stay competitive in their careers when they become pregnant. If I inspire some young boy or girl to dream big, work hard, and achieve more than they thought possible, it's a win for national security, Leavitt said in a release. It doesn't matter if they join the military or not, because we will be a stronger society. In the next article, commentary. Why the U.S. military has cared about climate change since the Cold War, dated March 19, 2025. In 1957, Hollywood released The Deadly Mantis, a B-grade monster movie starring a praying mantis of nightmare proportions. Its premise, melting Arctic ice, has released a very hungry million-year-old megabug, and scientists in the U.S. military will have to stop it. The rampaging insect menaces America's Arctic military outpost, part of a critical line of national defense, before heading south and meeting its end in New York City. Yes, it's over-the-top fiction, but the movie holds some truth about the U.S. military's concerns then and now about the Arctic stability and its role in national security. In the late 1940s, Arctic temperatures were warming, and a Cold War was heating up. The U.S. military had grown increasingly nervous about a Soviet invasion across the Arctic. It built bases and a line of radar stations. The movie used actual military footage of these polar outposts. But officials wonder, what if sudden snow and vanishing ice stalled American men and machines and weakened these northern defenses? In response to those concerns, the military created the Snow, Ice, and Permafrost Research Establishment, a research center dedicated to the science and engineering of all things frozen, glacier runways, and the behavior of ice, the physics of snow, and the climates of the past. It was the beginning of the military's understanding that climate change couldn't be ignored. As I was writing When the Ice is Gone, my recent book about Greenland, climate science, and the U.S. military, I read government documents from the 1950s and 1960s showing how the Pentagon poured support into climate and cold region research to boost national defense. Initially, military planners recognized threats to their own ability to protect the nation. Over time, the U.S. military would come to see climate change as both a threat in itself and a threat multiplier for national security. Ice roads, ice cores, and bases inside the ice sheet. Military snow and ice engineering in 1950 made it possible for convoys of tracked vehicles to routinely cross Greenland's ice sheet, while planes landed and took off from ice and snow runways. In 1953, the Army even built a pair of secret surveillance sites inside the ice sheet, both equipped with Air Force radar units looking 24/7 for Soviet missiles and aircraft, but also with weather stations to understand the Arctic climate system. The Army drilled the world's first deep ice core from a base it built within the Greenland ice sheet, Camp Century. Its goal, to understand how climate had changed in the past, so they would know how it might change in the future. The military wasn't shy about its climate change research success. The Army's chief ice scientist, Dr. Henry Bader, spoke on the Voice of America. He promoted ice coring as a way to investigate climates of the change of the past. Providing a new understanding of weather and understanding past climate patterns to gauge and predict the one we are living in today, all strategically important. In the 1970s, painstaking laboratory work in On the Camp Century, Ice Core extracted minuscule amounts of ancient air trapped in tiny bubbles on the ice. Analysis of that gas revealed that levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere were lower for tens of thousands of years before the Industrial Revolution. After 1850, carbon dioxide levels crept up slowly at first and then rapidly accelerated. It was direct evidence that people's actions, including burning of coal and oil, were changing the composition of the atmosphere. Since 1850, carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere have spiked and global temperatures have warmed by more than 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit. The past 10 years have been the hottest since record-keeping began, when 2024 now holding the record. Climate change is now affecting the entire Earth, but most especially the Arctic, which is warming several times faster than the rest of the planet. Seeing climate change as a threat multiplier. For decades, military leaders have been discussing climate change as a threat and a threat multiplier that could worsen instability and mass migration in already fragile regions of the world. Climate change can fuel storms, wildfires, and rising seas that threaten important military bases. It puts personnel at risk in rising heat and melts sea ice, creating new national security concerns in the Arctic. Climate change can also contribute to instability and conflict when water and food shortages trigger increasing competition for resources, internal and cross-border tensions, or mass migrations. The military understands that these threats can't be ignored. As Secretary of the Navy Carlos Del Toro told a conference in September 2024, climate resilience is force resilience. Consider Naval Station Norfolk. It's the largest military port facility in the world and sits just above sea level on Virginia's Atlantic coast. Sea level there rose more than 1.5 feet in the last century. It's on track to rise that much again by 2050 as glaciers around the world melt and warming ocean water expands. High tides already caused delays in repair work, and major storms and their storm surges have damaged expensive equipment. The Navy has built seawalls and worked to restore coastal dunes and marshland to protect its Virginia properties, but the risk continued to increase. Planning for the future, Navy incorporates scientists' projections of sea level rise and increasing hurricane strength to design more resilient facilities. By adapting to climate change, the U.S. Navy will avoid the fate of another famous marine power. The Norse forced to abandon their flooded Greenland settlements when sea level there rose about 600 years ago. Climate change is costly to ignore. As the impact of climate change grow in both frequency and magnitude, the costs of inaction are increasing. Most economists agree that it's cheaper to act now than deal with consequences, yet in the past 20 years, the political discourse around addressing the cause and effects of climate change have become increasingly politicized and partisan, stymieing effective action. In my view, the military's approach to problem solving and threat reduction has provided a model for civil society to address climate change in two ways: reducing carbon emissions and adapting to inevitable climate change impacts. The U.S. military emits more planet warming carbon than Sweden and spent more than $2 billion on energy in 2021. Accounts for more than 70% of energy used by the federal government. In that context, its embrace of alternative energy, including solar generation, microgrids, and wind power, has made economic and environmental sense. The U.S. military has been moving away from fossil fuels not because of any political agenda, but because of the cost savings, reliability, and energy independence alternatives provide. As sea ice melts and temperatures rise, the polar region has become a strategic priority. Russia and China are expanding Arctic shipping routes and eyeing critical mineral deposits as they become accessible. The military knows climate change affects national security, which is why it needs to continue to address the threats of changing climate presents, despite the rhetoric out of Washington. In case you're now just joining us, you're listening to Military Times. Ukraine claims to have fielded a drone-killing laser weapon dated March 19, 2025. The Hague, Netherlands. Ukraine claims to be one of the first countries to have successfully developed a laser anti-aircraft weapon, according to a high-ranking military official. The secretive device has reportedly been employed on a battlefield against low-flying targets, likely unmanned aerial vehicles like the Iranian-made Shahed drones. It was first revealed in an interview with a Ukrainian news outlet by Colonel Vadim Syrinsky, the commander of the unmanned forces system forces within the Ukrainian military. The device is known as Trizub, or trident in English, referring to Ukrainian national symbol, which is superimposed in yellow on a blue background in the country's now world-famous coat of arms. Information on a new system is scarce and jealously guarded. It was first publicly mentioned by Sursky in mid-December when he revealed the weapon's existence and some key parameters at a defense industry conference in Kyiv. As reported by Ukrainian Interfax news agency, asked about again by Radio Free Europe in February of this year, he confirmed that the weapon was operationally deployed. Speaking in the context of battlefield innovations to counter the threat of the Shahid and similar drones and loitering munitions, he said that, I repeat, laser technologies are already striking objects at a certain height. No pictures of Trizub have been released yet, and it's not possible to independently verify the Ukrainian military's claims, nor have there been any indications as to where it was deployed or exactly what or how many targets it was engaged. A spokesperson for Brave One, the Ukrainian government's United Coordination Platform for Defense Tech, said that it was unable to provide any comments regarding the Trizub weapon system or its development in response to an inquiry. It is unclear to what extent the Ukrainian laser weapon may still be in an experimental phase, although the military has claimed that it succeeded in shooting down enemy aircraft. It is entirely possible that there may be just a single system and its mobility may be limited. Laser weapons can be rather bulky due to their need for power generation and cooling infrastructure. This is a big part of why so many systems developed around the world are ship-based. However, experts said that a laser weapon system with the specifications that UK reportedly has made may be made to fit onto a truck bed. Comparable weapons, such as a South Korean Skylight, which entered regular production last year, has a similar range of 2 to 3 kilometers, is housed in a container with a volume of 81 cubic meters and generates approximately 700 degrees Celsius heat during the 10 to 20 second impulses. It entered service in December 2024. Despite the technological challenges, many major players have toyed with the idea of developing similar weapons and have dabbled in the research and design. The promised advantages primarily focus on the ability to defend against large numbers of low-cost attack aircraft, including drone swarms at low cost. In fielding such a system, Ukraine would join an elite club of significant military industrial powers that have developed laser weapons and an even smaller group that have deployed them. It comes as a part of a broader Ukrainian effort to reshape the battlefield through innovation. The unmanned systems forces, which appear to be involved in the operation and possibly the development of Trisub, considering its commander's role in announcing the system's existence, was only established in 2024. It has also been involved in Ukrainian innovations by drone swarming technologies that reportedly enhance their ability to strike deep within enemy territory. Well, I'm afraid this is all the time we have for now. Thank you for joining us for Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and I hope that you'll join us next time.